When can companies tell shareholders to go buzz off? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. A group of investors wanted ExxonMobil to vote on a climate change-related proposal. ExxonMobil said, basically, you can't tell us what to do. And federal regulators yesterday agreed. They said the oil giant could ignore those shareholder requests. Congress is grappling with this very same issue. When should shareholders be able to require a company to put something up for a vote? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now. Nancy, so what exactly happened with Exxon?
Well, some ExxonMobil shareholders tried to put a proposal on the ballot for this spring shareholder meeting, urging Exxon to set goals for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Yesterday, the Securities and Exchange Commission basically gave Exxon the okay to block that vote.
And the Senate is involved, too. How?
Well, yesterday, the Senate Banking Committee held a hearing on what's known as Environmental, Social, and Governance Investing Principles, or ESG. The chair of the committee, Republican Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho, said these issues were the biggest category of shareholder proposals last year.
Was there any conclusion at that hearing?
Well, Senator Crapo says they're a bad idea. He says most investors don't expect fund managers to be pressuring companies on environmental and social issues. But one witness at yesterday's hearing said companies that follow ESG principles don't lose money. And the ranking member on the committee, Democrat Sherrod Brown of Ohio, says environmental or political risks could cut into a company's long-term value, and investors should be told about them.
All right, Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thank you. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up less than a tenth of a percent. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 4 to 6 tenths percent range, with the Dow future up 111 points. The yield on the 10-year Treasury is at 2.51%. Leaders of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, are in Washington this week to celebrate NATO's 70th anniversary tomorrow. The U.S. relationship with its NATO allies has been fraught, let's say, since President Trump came to office. He's been relentless in criticizing Europe for not spending enough on defense. But Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports that internal strife and bickering is as much a part of NATO's history as peace.
7 years after signing the treaty, the U.S., France, and England were at each other's throats about the Suez Canal.
NATO's been in effectively a stable crisis since the day it was founded.
University of Akron political science professor Jim Sperling says there is one key difference now. President Trump has questioned whether the U.S. will defend Europe.
People are beginning to doubt the credibility of our obligation. He has crossed a line that no one else crossed.
In exchange for continued U.S. support, Trump says other nations ought to increase their individual defense spending. Sean Kay at Ohio Wesleyan University says his complaint is also nothing new.
There's a long-standing burden-sharing issue within the NATO alliance.
Kay points out, though, that NATO plays another role today than when countries first formed it.
This is the one principal mechanism that ties the United States to Europe still to this day.
For 70 years, since agreeing to defend against the Soviet Union, NATO's allies have also avoided war with each other. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Relying too much on technology can have its risks. Multiple people, for example, have driven their cars into lakes because they were relying on GPS. There's a version of that for accountants. These days, accountants use software programs to do your taxes. It makes things faster and allows them to file online with the IRS. But well into tax season, those software programs still haven't fully caught up with the new tax law. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra reports.
The other day, Andrea Parnes, a CPA in Queens, was working on a tax return.
I was ready to cry.
She'd been trying to figure out whether her client, a business owner, would qualify for a 20% tax deduction created under the new tax law. She'd done the numbers with paper and a calculator.
And then I looked at the version on the computer, and the software came up with something completely different.
She phoned a friend. Two, actually. Both CPAs.
And they both said, I think you're right. I think the software is wrong.
Parnes didn't want to say which tax software she uses, but she says it's been wrong several times this year. I've been hearing that a lot. Jeff Levine is a CPA in New York.
We've put all our businesses on extension because we just are not confident that the software's handled everything correctly.
The tax overhaul became law at the end of 2017. But for the companies that make professional tax software, TaxAct, Intuit, Wolters Kluwer, Thomson Reuters, there was a lot of information they still needed. Mark Yeager, a director at TaxAct, says the IRS had to come out with new forms and rules.
Then states have to figure out what they're doing. Do we conform? Do we follow the changes that happened at the federal level? Or do we start doing our own thing?
Every time they change the guidance, we need to go ahead and update the software.
Swati Garodia is with Thomson Reuters. She says a lot of these changes have come down to the wire.
Those updates from local authorities are coming in even today.
That means software companies have been in constant update mode, which means accountants have been in constant wait-a-minute mode, because those updates could apply to their clients. And worse, all those updates can lead to glitches in the software, like the one Andrea Parnes, the CPA in Queens, noticed. TaxAct and Thomson Reuters, the two software companies we spoke to, wouldn't say how many more glitches they've had this year. Parnes says the scary thing is, if she hadn't known the law well, she might not have noticed the error.
What about the people that aren't, you know, going to seminars and really up on what the laws are and what the answer should be? What about people who are just relying on their software to come up with the right answer?
She says, especially in a year like this, accountants have to remember that the software is just a tool and they can't let it do all the work for them. I'm Mary Elsegarra for Marketplace.
And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.